The U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence have weathered the storm of the Great Depression, of World War I, World War II, Civil War. Of course, I'm bouncing back and forth as far as the different time periods. Now we have the coronavirus. We're going to talk about this subject with a political science professor at Hillsdale College. His name is Adam Carrington. He has written an article recently about corona closings show government's purpose, not oppression. One of the statements he makes in that article is, "The rule of law forms a fundamental component of our republic. Most important, we look to our Constitution as the framework within which our governments, local, state, and national, must operate." This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Dr. Carrington, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Always glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Okay, so this coronavirus is a very serious crisis to our republic because the government is doing what it can to try and, you know, contain the problem on the one hand, and on the other hand, not allow a meltdown of the economy at the same time. So go ahead and wax eloquent about the coronavirus and the American republic.
Right. And what I think the underlying way, how can we be consistent of, in thinking about this, is to go back to what the purpose of government is. And if you look at the documents you were mentioning, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, it really is based on an idea of these unalienable rights endowed by God to us, life, liberty, property, pursuit of happiness, and the need for to have government to protect them, that there's reasons that they're not secure, even though we hold them no matter what, because we're human beings. And we kind of have a normal understanding of to what degree we need government to act to protect our life, liberty, property in normal times. Stop murders, stop kidnapping, stop fraud, things like that. But what makes these kinds of times really challenging is that they're not normal, and that we have to ask ourselves, when the threat to our life, liberty, or property gets upped more than normal, as many people believe this virus does that change the limits normally on government in what they can and should do to protect our health in this instance, which is part of our right to life, and to protect our property in the jobs that are being lost or threatened by this. And that's what's difficult about it. It's just not normal. Yeah. Normally we want government limited. Here we have to ask what situationally changes about that given these extreme times.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And let me go ahead and timestamp this discussion. You and I are talking at noon Eastern time on Friday, and that's March 27th in the year of our Lord, 2020. I say that because these circumstances and times change. And here the president said, I'd like to see America's economy rebound, you know, by Easter time, 2020. Others are saying, well, that's irresponsible because, you know, the health comes first, which is true. I mean, it's a difficult situation. This man needs our prayers and his vice president as well. But your comments.
Sure. I think it's very important to time stamp this, as you said, because the situations may change. It doesn't, by the way, what I'm trying to argue doesn't mean that every government action in relation or response to this virus is by definition legitimate. I think we've got to take we've got to be constantly looking at the payoffs in the sense of if this is something that could kill hundreds of thousands of people, the right to life is really important. But as you said, if millions of people are losing their jobs, their property and livelihood is involved there as well. So you're right. This is what makes these circumstances so difficult is government is meant and liberty is meant to operate in real life. And real life is not as simple as, you know, a treatise that some political thinker may write in the abstract.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, you know, abolition of property, private property. Absolutely. That's a fundamental, you know, column. I mean, gosh, the misery that Marx and Engels, you know, foisted upon the world compared to, you know, what we have with the founding fathers, who, looking at man's nature, seeing it, recognizing it as sinful, decided, okay, let's have a republic, but we'll protect ourselves not only from our fellow citizens, but we'll protect ourselves from the government, since the government is run by men and men are not angels. I'm kind of paraphrasing what Madison said in Federalist Number 51. But in effect, would you say, Dr. Carrington, that the worthiness and the value of the Constitution is in some ways being tested right now during this crisis?
Absolutely. And I'll just add something, your critique of Marx and Engels. One thing that the founders really harped on was we need two guides for how we're going to form and operate a government, reason and experience. Meaning we want principles of justice, but we want to see how do they best apply to circumstances, because people get hurt when you blindly just apply your own ideas without thinking about reality. And I think the real challenge here is something actually that Lincoln talked about on the eve of the Civil War. Can you have a government of, by, and for the people that is, on one hand, strong enough to protect, to maintain itself, but not so strong as to permanently infringe the purpose for which it was created, the rights of others? And I think what you need from that is, again, situationally, to say we should only expand what government's doing right now to the degree necessary to protect our health, to protect our lives, to protect our livelihoods, not one ounce more. And the second the situation changes, the second we no longer have the threat that many people think there is, we need to curtail it. We need to move back. So eternal vigilance on the part of the people is essential here to apply eternal principles to very particular circumstances.
Sure. So, for example, the government, the federal debt is out of control, and now they're saying, okay, we're going to do $2 trillion plus in spending of the taxpayers' money, which comes from us ultimately. And some people have said, well, that boils down to about $6,000 a debt, new additional debt for each one of us. How do you balance that? And then meanwhile, you have people like Nancy Pelosi saying, oh, we got to make sure that there's funding there for abortions. What? And then all these other things that have nothing to do with the coronavirus per se.
And that shows that last point, a certain lack of seriousness about the purposes of government or the situation we're in by some politicians. That if this really is such a crisis that we believe the lives at stake are worth an extreme attack, you know, an extreme hurting of the economy and a massive increase of the national debt. And by the way, lives are very precious. Why, you know, then we need to be just focusing on that. And those politicians that want to see this crisis as a way of getting through things that Americans have in normal times rejected that have nothing to do with the virus itself, you know, funding for this or funding for abortions or things like that, I think shows a deep misunderstanding of their part of what their job is in this kind of situation, or that they're not taking this seriously. I think that's a big point as part of the vigilance of government, what we have. Don't let people sneak in with their own partisan agendas to do something that the American people normally wouldn't want.
You know, it's interesting. This is an analogy from regular life. Sometimes marriages go through a crisis period. There's the old phrase of the 7-year itch. And what happens a lot of times is during a temporary, hopefully, temporary crisis, let's say a man has or whatever with a 7-year itch or something, he could end up throwing away a potentially lifelong marriage by making a stupid decision during a short-term crisis, as opposed to, you know, by God's grace, weathering the storm and, you know, many, many years later, he's still happily married. Do you see what I'm getting at? In other words, this could be just a very temporary crisis, but we could be making some very bad and stupid decisions that hurt us down the road, you know, permanently, if I'm making sense to you.
Absolutely. And I would say to sort of build off the, or to go to that analogy, if you can recognize that your marriage is in that kind of season or difficulty, you might act differently to protect that marriage than right. you normally would, as far as your interactions with other people or what you allow yourself and your spouse to do, what kind of time and investment you play into it. And I think it's a certainly the same kind of questions we've got to be asking now. And it's thankfully it's abnormal. We haven't seen something like this in a very long time as far as a health crisis. But it also means that what wisdom looks like is a much more difficult question, and definitely, as you said, something we need to be praying for our officials at the state and national level for wisdom and harmony in how they're trying to deal with it. Because we're trying to do extreme things now to preserve the long term, but we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater, as they say.
Right, exactly. Okay, so safety first on the one hand. On the other hand, permanent solutions count as well. What are your thoughts about what President Trump is doing and how well he's handling this crisis?
Right, and I think it's been interesting how much the states have been at the forefront of this, and probably, you know, there's a defense of the founder system of federalism based on that. I would say, you know, the president has been trying to balance the issues of the threat to life and the threat to the economy. I think that the federal government was a little slower on the uptake in recognizing and then moving on this, but I think that they've been doing a lot of catching up with testing, a lot of catching up with other things. And so, you know, it's hard to judge these things till the very end, but I think while there was a bit of a slow response at the federal level, I think they're catching up with themselves in some very helpful ways.
All right, let me ask you this. Two cities in contrast, Los Angeles, California, New York City, both with huge, thriving, you know, populations, and both having coronavirus challenges. Now, apparently, the number of deaths in New York City is going to far exceed that of Los Angeles. Does this boil down to how people handle these crises, how politicians deal with it?
I think it's how quickly they did in this instance.
Okay.
You know, weird thing to watch in Italy was how high the death toll was after they went on complete lockdown. And people were thinking, well, wait, they're on lockdown. What's the point? Well, what they had done weeks before that was only coming to fruition then. Mm-hmm. And it looks as if parts of California were much more proactive, much quicker, much more willing to immediately take economic, you know, restrictions and other things. And I think it's paying off in a way that New York was not willing to. And then this is part of the problem. You know, some people are saying if we are more intense, we can be shorter. But can we survive that? That's, of course, a separate issue as far as economically. But I think that's part of the difference is timing really matters here as far as how much you can contain versus how much you're stuck with the effects weeks later.
Right, right. That makes sense. Okay, we have 45 seconds to wrap up. Any last comments you want to make about this whole issue?
I think that this once just again shows to go back to something Lincoln says, that we want to preserve a government of, by, and for the people. You know, I'm certainly hoping and praying that this isn't as bad as a lot of people are worried it will be. But I think this is going to show how can a people come together as one country to care for each other. Sure. And to look out for each other, but also to be vigilant in preserving our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for the long term. That's my hope, and I've seen a lot of hopeful reasons to think the American people are stepping up to the challenge.
Excellent. Dr. Adam Carrington, thanks so much for being with us. Hillsdale.edu for more information. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Stay safe.